Hi, welcome to the Cancer Horizons podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals to do what CURE does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. After being diagnosed with kidney cancer that may have been a result of exposure on the 9/11 terrorist attacks in New York City, Stephen Edwards realized that he had to be his own advocate. Key to his advocacy was asking questions and getting as many professional opinions as possible. In this episode of the Cancer Horizons podcast, Edwards discusses his experience with kidney cancer and why he continues to move the field forward through patient advocacy.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, where you live, what do you do?
Okay, I'm immigrant from Britain, was always a journalist. I actually work as a teacher right now in the last few years. But at 9/11, I went down to cover 9/11 for our group, our newspaper and group, and was basically caught in the collapse of the tower, the first of the two towers that fell. And of course, consumed parts of the building, and as it was rammed down our throats, to put it bluntly. And some years later, discovered that had provoked kidney cancer.
So you mentioned kidney cancer. Can you tell us a little bit about your kidney cancer journey?
Yeah. So I discovered it on a trip while I was in Guantanamo, actually covering military commissions there. Of the people who were accused of 9/11, funnily enough. So there's almost a connection. And I was actually ill, we think from just food poisoning at a local restaurant's com bar, was vomiting and ended up going to the hospital. And I had a certain reading that prompted them to look at, conduct a CT of the abdomen, where we have discovered this tumor in your kidney. So I immediately came back to the States on a medevac, immediately, basically within days, had a nephrectomy, a radical nephrectomy. That seemed to be it at the time. At that time, which was 2010, there was basically nothing other than surveillance available. And so we went into surveillance, and 1 year went by, 2 years, more time went by. And I thought I just got away with it. And then finally, in 2017, there was the discovery that that it had gone metastatic. So that leaves me stage four now.
So what treatment did you undergo in 2017 once it was discovered that you were stage four metastatic kidney cancer?
With my oncologist, there was a sort of treatment proposed of what they call TKIs, which kind of shrink the tumors but can't cure you. And I was wondering what else was out there. And so I did actually start to go to another oncologist, or I consulted another oncologist that I'd known before. And he told me about this thing called high-dose IL-2, which is a very old technology. Is about 30 years old, but it does actually cure if you're lucky enough to be in the 7% of the people that it works on. And it will give some response to 30%, but it will literally only cure 7%. And it's an extremely harsh treatment. And so I started pursuing that. But in pursuing that with a particular doctor that gave that at that time, he was also involved in a trial with something called pegylated IL-2, and he made a convincing case for me to go on that instead, and that's what I did do. And I was on that for a year, but it turned out that didn't work for me, and I had progression, and so I went down that path of non-high-dose IL-2 for some time. There's many, many meanderings and stories, but that was the beginning of the story.
Mm-hmm. So were you undergoing scans once in a while being part of that trial that later discovered that you progressed on that treatment, or was it something else that you noticed by yourself?
No, no, I've basically never had, almost, no, I wouldn't say that, because I did have quite a lot of cancer in the lungs for a while in 2018, and I did have effects of that because it affected the breathing, especially going up and down stairs. But other than that, I've never actually had cancer-related symptoms. And that's why it took me to 2000, I didn't even discover it in 2010, it was an incidental finding. And so, the only reason we knew that it had spread was because of scans, and because actually one of the enlarged lymph nodes was in the neck. And so a simple sort of touch examination, did it. And so we could feel it. Often, this is the problem with cancer, is you just don't know until it's too, by the time you start getting symptoms, it's way down the road.
You were given the wrong first line treatment, which you knew 2 to 3 years later that it was wrong. So is that IL, the high dose IL-2 that, or the trial that you were on?
No, I wouldn't really say that anything's particularly wrong. There is no consensus on how to treat metastatic kidney cancer among oncologists. A couple of years ago, I was at an ASCO meeting. ASCO is like an association of oncologists in San Francisco. I'd gone as an advocate. And what these doctors do, these oncologists, they'll put out a case or several cases and say, and they give options for the audience to choose what, and the audience, they're all oncologists, by the way, to choose what they would do in terms of treatment. And there was never a majority ever. There was a plurality of like 42%. That was the highest ever that people agreed on, 42% on a particular one of the four options. So that shows that there's very much, that it's very different. And so that emphasizes why you should actually not just get the opinion of one oncologist. You've got to go to, I would say, as many as you can possibly afford or your insurance will let you do, because there's so much difference in the approaches. And even trying to get out of your geographical area if you can, because there's different centers. Texas has got centers, different centers across the country, New York, obviously. It's pretty hard to have an insurance that will cover the whole country, but you can do sort of, sometimes you might be able to pick up the cost of an individual consultation. So you do have to get out there and you do have to try and find out what the different approaches are, and then try to choose what you want, what you can tolerate as well. If you go on this high dose IL-2, which I would recommend, but you've got to be the sort of person that can take it. It's extremely harsh. It's like being tortured for two or three months, because if you do get a response, you're literally on it for 4 months in different week periods, right? Mm-hmm. Periods of a week each time. So you've got to be, I can't say I'd relish that at all, but I would do it to save my life.
Well said. So after it was determined that you had to switch kind of treatment plans, what ended up being the one that kind of worked for you? Where do you stand right now, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I'm not saying that anything, I'm still got stage 4 kidney cancer.
Right.
So I'm a long way from being cured. I can't say that anything worked for me yet until I've got clear scans. I don't have clear scans.
Right.
I mean, what we try to do is we aim for clear scans and we try to slow the growth down. And I've kind of taken an approach of, and this is completely against kind of general consensus, that even though I've got metastatic disease, to go after individual lesions. And most oncologists will just say, well, what, that they wouldn't endorse that, because if they say, well, even if you get this lesion, you've still got cancer somewhere else. I think that's kind of worked for me in slowing down the whole process. But I don't think I'm a long way from saying anything's worked for me. The only thing that that I would say anything's worked for me is if I had clear scans. I've never had clear scans since I was discovered to be metastatic.
You mentioned earlier that obtaining a second opinion is really important, but what advice would you give to patients who are kind of nervous about getting a second opinion, afraid of, you know, hurting their oncologist's feelings? You know, there's that hesitation sometimes to obtain a second opinion.
They should know, and they will know, that there are multiple opinions. This isn't like a general, commonly treated illness, as like a UTI or something, where everybody knows what the remedy is, and you almost don't need a second opinion because it's well and truly documented. This is something where there are massively different opinions on how to treat it. Any professional, and if they're an oncologist, they're a professional, is going to have the confidence that a second opinion is okay. And he doesn't even have to agree with his or her opinion. Because as I say, there are different opinions out there on how to approach it. I mean, you can go with TKIs, you can go with immunotherapies, you can try other things. But I personally, probably would consider whether it was the right doctor for me in the first place if a doctor was upset about going for a second opinion, because it's all about gathering information, just becoming educated yourself.
So when a patient is gathering information and educating themselves, obviously cancer is such a ever-changing field. What advice would you give patients to navigate this area, and why is it so important for them to be their own advocate?
Well, you have to be your own advocate because you basically, it's like being a student at school. You're much more likely to get help if you're often going to the teacher and start asking for extra help than if you just sit at the back of the class and look as though you don't ever want any help. So you have to be your own advocate with all these oncologists as well, to show that you're doing everything you can to educate yourself and to get the best treatment and to try and get a path out of this, even though technically it's incurable. So, or you know, like widely said to be incurable. But some people do get out of it. Many of them, it's because of this high-dose IL-2, which almost nobody's giving anymore. But some people do get out of it, and you just have to try and give yourself the best shot to be in among those some people. So that is why you've just always got to be going to sort of get noticed. Now, how do you get educated? Well, you listen intently to the doctors, to what they say. You ask a lot of questions about why this is growing, why that's growing. But you also read reports as well that come up, and you look on the clinicaltrials.com, and you look, search there, and you'll almost not understand a word at first, but you just have to use Wikipedia and just read every definitions. It's like learning a different language at first. Well, not just at first. I mean, even now for me, it's a different language, but you just got to plow through it, and you will get, it's like learning a language itself. It seems massive at first, but you'll start to see words repeating themselves after a while, and you will start to get some understanding, basic understanding.
So obviously, not only is it important to advocate for yourself, you, Stephen, but also you are an advocate for Kidney Cancer Association. How is that as an organization can be very, or other organizations that are out there can be very helpful for people, especially when they're doing the educating?
By being an advocate for Kidney Cancer Association, KidneyCan as well as another one, you are also learning all the time as well. You're mixing with people who are other cancer patients or have been close to other cancer patients. You're picking up all their knowledge. You're hearing about this, you're hearing about that. I'm on a committee that helps review applications for new research as one of the patient members. And that's great because I'm also actually learning about what's coming down the line. And as I say, by reading up and looking on Wikipedia what this means and what that means, you can get an idea of what's coming or what could come in the next 10 years. The advocacy is actually, it does help yourself as well. You know, it's good to get in there. Don't forget, kidney cancer is one of the lowest three cancers, lowest funded cancers for life years lost, one of the lowest funded. So we always have an obligation to try and get the word out there and try and get some more money coming into it, government money. mainly, because that could be the biggest.
Well, Stephen, those are basically all the formal questions that I prepared, but I wanted to see if there was anything else you wanted to mention to patients, families, caregivers, whoever may be reading or even listening to this before we finish up.
My message is it seems insurmountable, but you just have to keep going. There's only one way, and that's forward. There's no other way. There are a lot of setbacks. Even if you start to think that this is working or that's working, there are a lot of setbacks. Suddenly the scans show something when you thought that some drug combination was, you know, doing well. And then suddenly it's disappointing. I had that only last week, actually. Very disappointing. But there is only one way forward. And you can only do what you can do in the time you have. And we really don't know how it will be, because it's a rapidly changing field. And I don't think we should just sit back and hope that the field changes long and quick enough for us to benefit from it. We should actually be active in trying to do what we can to help that change. And to help that change, advocacy and getting more money into the whole research world is one thing that we can just do as patients and tell our stories.